Hello, and thank you for joining us on this episode of The Dev Team. I'm Mark Ownsman.
I'm Daryl Kilzer.
And I'm Jake Overall.
We're a group of developers and bootcamp instructors here to help you in joining the world as a software developer. Whether you're a self-taught developer, bootcamp grad, or a CS student, we're here to help you fill in some of the knowledge you need to grow in your role as a junior developer.
This week on The Dev Team, Jake starts us off with dependency injection as word of the day. Daryl Kuhl sings down in dev news discussing the Arctic Code Vault and joining of NPM and GitHub. Lastly, I'll take our deep dive into making the most out of your first 30 days as a junior developer.
So for kind of the word of the day topic, one of the things that I want to discuss is the concept of dependency injection and what that actually is and kind of what it means, right? Because it's one of those terms, it's one of those object-oriented pillars, right? And I feel like it's one of those things that when I very first got started, I struggled with quite a bit, right? And I think it's broken into two parts. First and foremost, what is a dependency? And then what the heck do we mean by injection, right? And so... kind of thinking about a dependency in a code-based or a software term, it's just like it sounds. It's a piece of code or functionality that should be self-isolated, that should be able to be functional in and of itself, essentially passed around to another piece of code to perform its action there within that scope, right? And that's kind of that injection part of it. And so, dependency injection, it can be a very complex topic, but in its simplest form, it's really essentially just creating an object with some methods and then passing that object to some other method or to some other process.
So do you find it more often to be like, you know, as we talk about like an MVC pattern, the model, the service, the controller, where do you find juniors will actually see the best use out of this?
I think, you know, a lot of that kind of depends on the framework or maybe the language that they're using. You take a programming language like C#, and all of your dependency injection is probably going to be handled in like a startup class or something of that nature. It's probably more like app-wide based, and it's one of those things that, you know, quite frankly, the juniors probably won't necessarily have to ever implement like an IOC container, but they will be using the code that does get passed around quite often. And again, the complexity derived there just needs to be, here's an object or here's a class instance with these methods. Here's this API that I've exposed to you. If you need it, just have it passed in.
So obviously it's something we use a lot in our particular curriculum when we get to C#, right? And we're talking about transient services that get injected into controllers and repositories that get injected into services, and it kind of flows throughout. Is there anywhere else that you've used this within your own code bases?
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of with especially kind of more front-end applications. If you start looking at how AngularJS is set up, or I guess the new Angular, right? Whichever version we're on now, it utilizes a module system for loading a bunch of different stuff. And especially in TypeScript, it makes it really simple to kind of identify and clarify where you have different modules that get loaded into other sections of code, right? Yeah, I think, Daryl, you've done quite a bit with TypeScript and Angular, right?
Yeah, that actually kind of reminded me of maybe something to go back to one of the previous questions where juniors might use this. Dependency injection really lends nicely to, since you can choose how your objects are connected and where this goes to, it makes it really easy for testing and building out mock, you know, information, things of that nature. So I think on the front end, that's probably why Angular chose to go that route, is it lends really well to creating that test infrastructure inside of there. So,
yeah, absolutely. And it's even something as mundane as what you see in a lot of the other JavaScript frameworks, your two-way binding, right? You're binding to input fields, right? Angular has taken that piece of functionality and they've abstracted it, right? And they've
pulled
it into
its own. Oh, that was last week, abstraction.
Yeah, abstraction, that's right. But Angular has taken that, they've pulled it into kind of its own little module. And then if your particular app has a form in a specific place, then if you need that two-way data binding, you just inject that form module, right? And if you don't, then you don't inject it. So that's very much the way that is set up.
Yeah, and that actually is really nice to use in that way, because it kind of addresses one of the maybe disadvantages of using DI, is kind of that with all that flexibility, you know, there's always some sort of offset. And so having to configure everything all the time is not necessarily the most fun thing to do.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That goes back to that conversation that we had last week where we say every layer of abstraction adds a layer of confusion.
Absolutely.
Which is absolutely true in this circumstance as well. But, you know, that dependency injection kind of, again, is that concept of saying, okay, let's write this code once, and then we'll just pass it around to wherever we need it.
It becomes a much more beneficial utility.
Third-party access of code with a minimal coding on your part.
That's right.
All right. For the news this week, what we got is, you know, have you guys seen the or get any code into the Arctic code vault?
the stored forever, all my errors and all the terrible code I've written, saved for generations to see? No, tell me all about that.
Oh, man, what are your shame forever locked away in the Arctic vault?
Yeah, super cool little badge that shows up on your profile. Mine showed most of the Boise CodeWorks stuff, so we probably all have the same things in there.
Yeah, I had some really old projects, I think, from even when I first started as a developer, showed up in that little list. So I was like, oh boy, this is not good.
Maybe didn't pick the finest pieces to archive, but hey.
I thought it just took and pretty much dumped anything that was public. Wasn't that kind of the way that was originally set up?
Yeah, I think it highlighted like three of them for whatever reason. I'm not sure how that algorithm chose the three. And then, yeah, it grabbed all your public code.
Yeah.
Well, guessing since it chose kind of some of your earlier on projects and same for mine, I would imagine it was those ones that GitHub, you know, pinned there when you created your account and you never changed.
And you never bothered to change.
Oh, those, yeah.
Because you probably also haven't updated your profile and things of that nature.
Talked about that last week a little bit, changing those out. So, whoops, too late.
I do think that the Arctic Vault kind of introduces a weird concept, though, of that whole, like, the idea is this thing's going to be locked away for thousands of years or something of that nature, right? Like, what type of device did they store it on? And 1,000 years from now, how are they even going to read that thing? Or did they leave instructions? Like, I don't know. Is it like ice crystals, like Fortress of Solitude?
Absolutely.
I haven't heard anything about that, but it's funny.
Great shame upon our world if that's what we give to baby Superman.
It's going to be similar to, you know, Zork. Hey, we recovered these ancient tapes and pulled this ancient language off of here and ported it over.
Yeah, I think, though, to an extent, like, a part of it feels kind of cool, right? Like, you're cool, pun intended. Like, you feel like, oh, man, like, I wrote some code that's going to last for thousands of years. Like, there's a part of you that's got
to. It's not going to run for thousands of years.
It won't run.
It's just there.
It won't run for 10 minutes. But that said, like, it's definitely kind of that cool moment for sure.
Yeah, I think it was definitely a neat idea for GitHub to kind of do that.
Speaking of GitHub, they've kind of been a hot topic lately. GitHub and NPM have been, you know, considering kind of this like merger deal for a little while. Looks like it's finally kind of official. GitHub is acquiring NPM, and a couple really cool things that I think are going to come from that is all of your, you know, you'll be able to manage just like you do with your GitHub repositories now. You'll be able to give the same access to those same developers you already currently work with on the same platform to all of your NPM tools and libraries and packages. So that's going to be really nice. There's, you know, there was kind of already a workflow there with GitHub Actions, but I think this is going to make that much more simple. And then GitHub being the, you know, open source icon that it is, bringing NPMI into that, I think it's just going to make it that much more accessible. So,
yeah, I think that's actually going to be really nice to be able to manage, you know, contributors and all that just through a single platform now, because that has for a while now been kind of a pain point of mine in particular, you know, publishing a library and I need to add this and update this. And, you know, finally GitHub Actions did simplify that process, but I think it will just be much nicer all rolled into one.
Oh, yeah. Just on our team right now, you know, it's always, hey, you want to go update that tool? Okay, now I push this code to this repository, but now you need to pull that down because you're the one that can actually publish that thing.
Right.
And then you over here send that up. So even just on our small team, we've, you know,
yeah, Daryl, I set that up so that I could make sure you always needed me.
Oh, that makes
job
sense.
Security.
Yeah, yeah.
He just wanted all the credit.
Exactly. The one thing, I guess, and maybe they've said this and maybe they haven't, but I hope is a little more clear, is sometimes there's NPM packages that I find like, okay, this is really interesting, but what does the code look like? Before I bring in this random package, let me see the code. And so far from what I haven't found where NPM has that kind of functionality or that kind of ability. Do you know if that's coming?
Yeah, I believe that's just going to kind of be a built-in part since it'll be all managed from the same kind of location there. Just like you said, when you're on NPM, it's really up to the person that's maintaining that tool to not only, you know, maintain it from the command line, but also go on to NPM itself and update those and put those links in there. And hey, we change repositories. Hey, we change dependencies and that type of thing. Again, like you said, I think that's going to be a really nice feature of it coming over to GitHub, is it's just all in one spot. And, you know, they've been working on linking, even just in singular repositories, references to different sections of your code. So I imagine that's going to become a more prominent feature there as well.
Yeah, that'd actually be really nice if I could jump into GitHub and, like, look at someone's package JSON and then just basically directly click and follow a link to an NPM package. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, that is super nice. I also think it's going to be really beneficial with all of GitHub's bots for saying, hey, this dependency is out of date, you should update. You know, you get all of those prompts and notifications. Hopefully these package managers and maintainers will be more apt to, you know, yes, upgrade to the newest edition, and, you know, all of those things that bots can kind of pretty much handle. GitHub does a really good job there already. So hopefully that will just make that workflow much easier for everyone involved.
Yeah, absolutely.
So in our deep dive this week, I wanted to talk a little bit about the first 30 days as a junior. So you've landed your job, you start day one, and now, quite frankly, from talking to several of our alumni, for day one for everyone is a little bit different. Some people, it's like, okay, day one, you're going to start this little, you know, training program, and you're going to learn our specific way of doing things, and we have a very well-organized process that you'll go through. Whereas other people are like, you see that station over there? Put your laptop down, and good luck.
Yeah, onboarding? What's that?
I wanted to kind of talk a little bit about how, aside from day one, but how juniors can kind of make the most out of that first 30 days, right? That first even 30, 60, 90 days, because that's typically when we have what we call the junior shield, right? Like, oh, I made this mistake, but it's okay, you're a junior developer. And we even tell people that, you know, depends on the company, but sometimes that lasts even as much as 6 months. But beyond that, you're a developer, you're responsible, a fully fledged team member, it doesn't matter.
Right. Yeah. No, absolutely. I think it's very important to identify that most dev teams, for the most part, pretty much everywhere that I've worked, the hierarchy is pretty flat, right? Like, yes, you have seniors. Yes, you have juniors. You have intermediates. You have all of that stuff. But when it comes to just getting work done, we all have responsibilities. And maybe my workload is going to be a little bit bigger than, say, a junior's workload, but the work that gets accomplished is just as important as my work, if that kind of makes sense, right? Everything just needs to get done in order for us to actually have a deliverable, especially if you're working in kind of that Scrum idea where, you know, we need to have a deliverable at the end of this sprint, right? And so being able to make sure that you are contributing, that you're doing a good job, that yes, your code is on track, I think the biggest key thing, most important thing for any junior is communication, right? Let me know when you get stuck. Don't be afraid that you're going to get fired in your first 30 days something of that nature, because you have to say, I don't know what this is. Obviously, you don't know what it is. This is a huge project that we're all a part of, right? And so I have no issue, you know, taking some time out of my day to explain something to you. But if you're not communicating, then, you know, now that's when your job is going to be more on the line than by any other mistake.
I think another big key thing to kind of take into account is look around you. See, you know, like you were saying, everybody's got a pretty equal workload, or in relative terms, right? And the other interesting thing from our industry is you may write a large amount of code or one singular line, and they may have, you know, similar value to the team in general. And so kind of look around and see what others are doing. What makes them a successful member in the team? Why does the team think that they are of value? You know, mimic those things. Just pay attention. Maybe writing 5 billion lines of code isn't very important if, you know, you're not following those patterns. You're not adhering to what the team values.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mark, you started this topic off with an interesting thing, and it was the concept of the junior shield, right? It's that little bit of protection that you have because you're brand new to this industry. We're all aware of it. We kind of all know, you know, and so you're going to have all sorts of junk thrown your way. And if you fail to actually meet a deliverable, or if you fail to accomplish a task or something of that nature, for about, you're right, pretty much the first 6 months of kind of on the job, getting familiarized with the team, you know, you have this little shield that all of those responsibilities will essentially just bounce off of, right? You know, it's not ultimately your fault that you failed or that you didn't achieve that. Maybe I misappropriately assigned you tasks. Maybe I misappropriately weighted the complexity of a particular problem or something of that nature. And so that's one of those things to just definitely kind of think about, is that Shield's going to protect you from some of the complexities of just getting to know each other, right?
I think another thing that's really important, aside from, like, here's mistakes you'll make, but to really remember for juniors is don't fall in love with your code. Don't have a code baby, right? We talk about that because oftentimes you'll go into your senior and, you know, you spent the last week on this, and that's a long time. That's a big project. You spent a whole week on it, or two or three, and now it's a really huge project and you're so proud of it, and you'll go in there and go, oh, this is a lot of garbage, and here's all the terrible spots, and I'm going to cut about 70% of your code, if not more. And I think a lot of juniors go in and that happens to them, right? And it's the first time someone else has reviewed their code that they wrote and said, this is bad, this is no good, and here's why. And again, if you have a good senior, it's a constructive conversation, not just your code is garbage, get out, but more of a here's why and here's what you need to improve. But for my advice too is like, be prepared for that moment. Be prepared for that first time someone else looks at your code and judges you with it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we were talking about our GitHub shame, right? I want to throw this out here, and it's something that one of my very first seniors actually told me, and it was, all code is bad, right? All code is pretty much ugly, and it is atrocious. It's just, can the team actually work with it? You know, it's does it meet at least like the team's flavor of bad, right? And so I think a lot of just kind of getting started and getting up and rolling, as much as communication is important, adhering to the code styles that we're using at this company with this particular team is just as important as anything else, right? You might have learned how to do something one particular way, but it's time to learn how we do it here, right? And I think that's true pretty much no matter where you go, but I'm talking more about like the flavor of the code, if that makes sense.
Yeah, we kind of talked about that last week about being a code ninja, right? That blend in with the code.
Yeah.
Well, you never know. You may write something that's awesome and amazing, and you know, it might end up as a bonus level in a video game somewhere, just because it's like, cool, that's great and everything, but we've decided to go in a different direction. There's no longer, you know, a need for a calendar, so... Good job, great code.
That's oddly specific there. I think, though, that's, yeah, absolutely. All the time you'll write code that may never, ever see the light of day. Or if it does, it's maybe an internal tool. You know, it's rare that juniors right out of the gate are writing, especially with bigger organizations, public code.
Yeah, customer-facing code is, quite frankly, it's terrifying to deliver something on that on that scale. And so, you know, be comfortable with working on internal tools first, right? Get to know the code base. One of my favorite things to do with any junior is to start them in testing, right? Let's have you touch every piece of this application from a testing standpoint before I expect you to dive in and start actually writing new features, right? And I think just having that at the forefront of your mind as a junior level developer, if you're starting in test, that's a perfect place to start. Don't feel like you haven't made it. Don't feel like you're being diminished or anything of that nature. Testing is a great place to start to familiarize yourself with a project and with a team's particular code flavor.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, while you've got that junior shield, you got that life vest on, go dive in the deeper end of the pool. Don't just hang out in the kiddie pool where, you know, you're not even using that life vest. Get those errors out of the way. Get comfortable.
Yeah, and I think that lends to an even bigger topic, right? That a lot of juniors will enter into the field and they don't want to make mistakes. They're afraid. They become paralyzed by, I don't want to break other people's code, and so I'm not going to write anything. And Daryl and I actually have this exact experience here working on some of the CodeWorks tools that, you know, it was like, okay, cool. I want to dive in. I want to help work on this application, but oh man, it's trepidatious because I don't know what this entire application does. So I'm afraid to work on this feature. And there's a bit of time to overcome that for sure.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a time to overcome that. But the other thing that I would point out there specifically is like, well, shame on me is the senior type of idea if that's how the juniors feel and they're not comfortable communicating that with me. Or the other thing to kind of think about there is you should be able to just feel comfortable, break whatever you want, right? As long as you're using like appropriate branching strategies and things of that nature, you're working on your own little isolated branch, you know, figure it out, destroy stuff, you know, get it working. It doesn't super matter, right? Just don't be surprised if I reject your pull request because you've changed 9,000 lines of code. I might then have you go back and say, okay, wait, let's have you rebranch from here, bring over the stuff that is actually good, and then we're good to go, right? Having that little isolated environment and being able to put juniors into that box where they can actually do work, I think is the responsibility of the senior, not the responsibility of the junior, to know and understand that that's the environment that they are actually working in.
Yeah, another big thing is obviously having tests in place. And we keep bringing these up and we'll probably maybe even have to do a specific segment on tests. But that said, you know, in those environments, a lot of times a good company will have a testing environment and an even better company has a separate production environment.
So, no test like production.
There is no test like production. The users are the testers.
Absolutely.
I'm going to add a caveat here because I know I don't know everyone this is getting broadcasted out to. So I'm going to say bad advice. Don't just push code to production and hope for the best. But that said, right, a good dev team is going to have that testing environment. And there is those tests written that should provide you that comfort and that stability to say, okay, I am going to write some code. And at the end of it, all these tests should still remain passing. And that's a part of that code ninja, right? I didn't break something else while I was doing my job.
Right. And again, it's one of those things where if you're a junior and you've stepped straight into a project and you realize there's zero tests anywhere, right? And you're feeling trepidatious, you don't want to break something, you know, you're trying to figure out how do I actually bring value to the team in my first 30, 60, 90 days, right? Pull your senior aside or, you know, talk about it in a stand-up or something of that nature. Bring to the table, hey guys, do you think we should actually like implement a test suite here? I'm more than happy to go behind and start writing some tests for the dev team, right? I'm happy to, you know, kind of contribute in that way, but I need help getting the testing suite set up. How do you want it to work? What do you want me to test? Like, is, you know, let's talk about that 80-20 rule, right? And let's make sure that we're actually providing good value there.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think like you had said earlier, your senior's probably well aware that's, you know, part of his job to make sure this is happening. So you bring that up and he may be like, oh, what a relief. Okay, so they already know what's going to need to happen. Let's just put them down that path. And, you know, they've got their junior shield there. Be that voice of change. Try it out. See what happens.
Yeah, I think another piece of advice to put forward, right, is that don't be afraid to speak up, right? This comes back to communication a little bit, but we've had conversations with another one of our seniors that we know. And the big piece is like he talks about how he loves it when juniors bring up new ideas in a meeting. You know, you're sitting in that meeting. Don't just sit there quietly. Say, hey, you know, have we considered doing it this way? Or why aren't we doing it that way? And sometimes you'll get shot down. Absolutely. And they'll be like, no, here, let me pull you aside and explain to you that, you know, this is why that would never work. But two things have just happened. One, you've learned. And two, you've shown that you have ideas. And other times you'll come up with something and the whole team will sit there and go, oh man, you know what? That is a good point. Best case scenario, you have come up with a great idea and now you've contributed to your team even more.
Yeah, I think the other thing that comes up there is it also tells me that you're not just like playing a game on your phone in the middle of this meeting. You're paying attention. You're trying to contribute. You're putting forth an effort. I don't care if your ideas are bad, right? I don't care if your ideas are wrong or never going to work. It may jog something in my mind that will actually work, right? Or as a senior, one of my favorite things to do is to actually just train juniors, right? It's the reason why I started a code school specifically to train people is I love training, is I love imparting that knowledge into new developers. And so, you know, now it's like, hey, cool, I can identify a gap that otherwise I may not know that you actually have. And here, let's get you caught up and let's get you up to speed on this. And oh, look at all of these like resource materials that I have, you know, go check out this YouTube video simply because you spoke up and you offered an idea and I can, you know, then set you down a good path.
I think that adds to kind of a final point I wanted to bring up in this section, and that is to find a mentor. It should be your senior, but not always is it. You know, I think I've seen plenty of people go out and start jobs and they have a senior and that senior may be a really good developer, but they're not a good mentor. They're not a good teacher of any way, shape, or form. They're just good at, you know, writing code. Maybe they're not a people person or whatever it might be. But how do you establish what a good mentor is, or how do you reach out and find and say, hey, you know, I think your code is really good and strong and you have a lot of understanding here. What should I be doing?
So one thing to kind of point out there, as I think about, you know, how do you find that mentor? I think it's important to identify that, you know, the senior at your particular company, they might just be tired, right? They could be burnt out. You know, there could be a lot of different reasons why maybe they're not a great senior right now. Doesn't mean that they're not a great senior ever, but it could definitely be one of those things. They could also just not be a very good people person, right? And so I think that those are all things that you need to consider as you're also trying to find that mentor. I think one of the best places to start would, of course, be, you know, meetup groups, you know, kind of the user groups, that type of idea. Now, that might be particularly hard, especially right now during the midst of this, like, COVID epidemic, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, as suggestions outside of like meetup.com and things of that nature right now, where a lot of these events that are happening remotely, it is kind of hard to make that personal connection. So starting from scratch, ideas, yeah, where can our users find some good mentors?
I think right now you have to come up with kind of ideas that are outside of the box, right? Like my immediate thought, and this sounds like terrible advice until you really like take some time and think about it, but like, even something like a social platform like Reddit, right? There are plenty of domain subreddits where it's like, hey, this is like, you know, maybe your company does Vue. There is a Vue subreddit. See who's posting a lot. See who's, you know, doing stuff like that. And be bold. Be brave. Reach out to them. The other platform we push all the time is LinkedIn, right? LinkedIn is a social platform by all intents and purposes. It is a social platform specifically designed around business. But that would kind of also give you the way of saying, okay, let me find someone in this space. And maybe there is one question that you have and kind of start with, don't just be like, hey, you know, this is, my name's Mark. Will you be my mentor? Right? Because that's weird.
It is weird.
But if you said, hey, I noticed that you're, you know, an expert in such and such a field, and I've been really struggling on this particular concept, is it possible you'd have some time to chat with me? And again, whether that's on like a Zoom call or, hey, let's meet in the park and stay 6 feet away from each other.
Yeah, that opens up actually some interesting ideas and some thoughts. If you think about just the wealth of knowledge that is Stack Overflow, right? That's people who are spending their free time to go look at questions that other people have and to try and come up with answers, right?
Or troll them.
Or troll them, right? There's a little bit of that, of course. You can find that especially on like Reddit and some of those other user groups and whatnot. But especially with kind of the way that the world is changing, it might not be such a weird thing to reach out to someone and say, hey, you know, I'm using this framework, or I'm using this tool, or I'm using this library that you came up with. Many of those libraries now actually have either like Gitter accounts, or they have like a Slack channel or something of that nature, or a Discord. I've seen developers all over Discord lately too. And so it might not be weird to just join a channel, you know, and ask some questions directly in there, right? And people will take the time out of their day to actually answer questions for the most part, especially if it's about something that I'm really passionate about, some library that I've written or some library that I've contributed to, or even just some library that I use regularly, right? Everyone has those like, you know, JavaScript's the very best language ever. And you have the people on the opposite side of the fence who are, you know, JavaScript's the very worst language ever. You know, if you're a JavaScript developer, don't find your mentor who hates JavaScript, right?
I think you keyed in on a very important aspect there is, you know, all of those platforms, the thing they have in common is you've got a senior or someone in a potential mentor position that is looking for that interaction. They're actively on there because they want to have that interaction. And so that's naturally a very easy place for you to go. And you can get around kind of all the personable stuff like Mark was saying, you know, don't reach out and, hey, you want to be my mentor? And What I found, or what I kind of have always done, is I've joined a lot of the little like hackathons for building little games. I mean, I was in game development at the time, but that's something that I've always enjoyed because I didn't ever have to. I'm not much of a people person, and so I didn't ever have to really go, "Hey, can you teach me some cool stuff?" It was more of, "Well, I'm going to join this hackathon. I'll get thrown on a team, and hopefully, I'll be able to show them some things, and they can show me some stuff."
Not a bad approach, actually.
And you end up, you know, I end up finding people that I thought, man, this guy's really smart. I really like how he handles these things, and just kind of chatting with them and creating that friendship, and then going into more competitive hackathons with an already formed team and things like that.
Having that shared goal or common interest, working towards a single thing, you get to kind of not worry so much about the social aspect. And it's like, hey, let's solve this problem together, right? And that's what most developers live off of, is that high of solving problems.
And there are, to be fair, there are professional services that'll do this too, right? I know a couple online, I'm not endorsing any of them in particular, but that have that as a paid service to connect people like that. And so, in absolutely worst, I'm dire and desperate need. Maybe consider you're an unfriendly person, but beyond that, that was a little rude. I apologize. But beyond that, right, sometimes you just don't have that social interaction available to you. So cool. Any other kind of parting advice for juniors within their first short period of time?
I just can't reiterate more, communicate, talk to your senior, talk to your team, eat lunch together. little things like that go a very long ways.
Try something. Learn.
All right.
Don't sit idle. Yep.
Well, with that, we'll go ahead and close this episode. Thank you everyone for joining in and listening into this podcast, and have a great rest of your day. Joining us for this episode of The Dev Team. If you're interested in learning more about our team or possibly starting a career in software development, reach out to us at boisecodeworks.com. Follow us on Facebook and like and subscribe to this podcast to continue to receive the latest updates. Until then, from The Dev Team, remember, if you want clean code, wash your hands.